Broadcasting 2.0 for April 24th, 2026, episode 258, Perceptron. Hello, everybody, from a balmy south by southwest of the country. It is time for Podcasting 2.0. This is where we discuss it all. It all goes down. We've got the ragtag crew of 2.0ers hanging out in the boardroom because it is the official board meeting of Podcasting 2.0. In fact, we are the only boardroom that is not a part of the Islamabad peace talks. I'm Adam Curry here in the heart of the Texas Hill Country and in Alabama, the man who will balance your weights according to the model you want to be. Say hello to my friend on the other end, the one, the only Pod Sage, Mr. Dave Jones.
You managed to get that done, even with the cedar fever.
Yeah, it's I got the cedar fever, and the only thing that will cure it is more cowbell. I'm working on it.
You don't get knocked out like this very often.
No. I had this in January, I think. I don't get knocked out by much.
No, you don't.
What do you mean? My node isn't live in the splits. What does this mean? Eric PP says, your node isn't live in the splits. What does that mean?
Isn't in the live splits.
Oh, well, that's okay. It's not in the live item. What is that? What is that all about? No wonder I'm not getting live boosts. Hold on a second. Let's see. Let me see. It's not in there, really? Let me see. Value? What is this? Oh, I see. Okay. Well, that would make sense. Let's see. What am I? Adam at getalby.com. Can do that.
This is the listen to people type on their keyboards.
I really don't care. I don't care.
Because I'm saying that because I'm doing the same thing.
Yeah, I really don't care. I don't care what anybody thinks of me. All right, so let me do this. Yeah, well, no wonder things weren't working. Well, that's what?
Yeah, thanks, Eric.
Yeah, really. Sorry to derail the show. No, you did it, man.
You were running, and Eric just took his leg out.
I was good to go. Everything's fine. But also the way I read it. I mean, this is not how he wrote it, but let me see what he said. I got to read it. The way I received it was. Your node isn't in the live splits again. See, that's how I read it. and that is obviously the problem why I wasn't getting live boosts on the last show. It makes so much sense now. Okay.
This was a gift from Eric, from Sir PP.
No, of course it's a gift. And I'm just telling you how I feel. And you know, my wife was mean to me a minute ago.
Oh,
yeah.
I'm so sorry. You know,
yeah, I say, I'm going to do the show, and she's huffing and puffing and doing the sheets. And doing the sheets sucks, putting the new sheets on. I say, you should have just asked me. I'm like, oh, okay. And then she says, whatever. I'm like, did you just say whatever to me?
You got whatever?
I got whatevered. I'm like, okay. All right. Well, she says, so what is that? So that's not worth even talking about. Yeah, but you whatevered me, man.
Yeah, it's like, deal with this after the show.
Yeah, well, and have a nice show. Have a good show. Not I just whatevered you. hello, boardroom. How y'all doing? This is Podcasting 2.0, where we discuss all things podcasting.
And sheets.
And pod pings and all kinds of stuff. Yes. Had a fun town hall on... Wednesday with Alex Sanfilippo.
A town hall.
Yeah, he put together a town hall. He'd done some survey. I guess this all happens on LinkedIn, I'm sure.
About how do you do? What is the difference between, like, what are the criteria that delineates a town hall from a fireside chat?
A town hall means it's all Zoom, so it's basically a Zoom call. But the town hall had multiple people speaking, and that's actually a pretty good question, because some people were like, well, what kind of town hall is this? I thought I got to stand up and ask questions.
No questions.
There were scheduled speakers. It was about the issue of people spamming to get guests onto podcasts, which we had discussed in a previous board meeting, to which I had suggested the booking tag.
Yes. Okay.
And so, you know, Tom Rossi was on, and you know, it was actually quite good.
What Tommy have to say? Tommy R.
He said, his contribution was, you know, hey, we're taking out the email addresses from the RSS feeds. Mm-hmm. Okay. And then I came in and said, yes, and that's very good. And so what we're doing is we're suggesting putting a tag in called the booking tag. And you know, it was kind of a scripted thing. You know, it was like, here's the problem. Here's interim solutions. Here's the solutions. And I think overall it was really good. And now Alex and Daniel J. Lewis are working on the tag to get that.
Oh, good.
Yeah. Okay. So it was kind of an industry rah-rah thing. I thought it was quite good.
Not as scripted as the interview that Pod News had with the lady from Spotify.
Oh, I have not. I've been just working nonstop this morning. I'm being whatevered. I just, you know, rocking and rolling. I'm getting, you know, live servers up and running and Godcast to you videos. And I've been so behind because of this Cedar fever. So I did not listen to it. How was that? What was the interview about? Who is she? What lady from Spotify? Who's on first?
I don't remember her name. It was, it's basically one of those interviews where I'm going to send you questions. This is what it sounded like to me. I'm going to send you questions. You record them, send them back to me, record the answers, and then we'll splice it all together.
I hate those.
So it's like, because I mean, usually you could hear almost everything but the paper that she was reading off of crinkle.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it was fairly forgettable.
But, what was it about though? What was the,
how to get like or how to get boosted in their ranking or something. No, that's not the right way. How do you
game their
system? Spotlighted or whatever? Yeah, yeah. The bottom line was you can't.
How to get spotlighted.
You
need to find out who's on the staff and take them out for drinks. like the way it's supposed to be.
I mean, it sounded to me like they do it the same way Apple does it, which is they just roll dice and pick somebody from a list or you know somebody on the inside and you get an attaboy or something.
No, I don't think there's any way to break in from the outside. You know, the whole problem is it's editorial team. They start to run it like they're overlords. And it's not bad. That's how you do it when you're running editorial. You determine and everybody hates you except the people that that got highlighted and everyone else thinks you're a douche. That's the job.
Any algo that you put out there, somebody's going to figure that thing out and game it. I mean, it's just, you can't do it any other way.
No, it's
right. I mean, this,
but algos suck. Algos are no good. I'd rather have it be editorial. Totally. In fact, you know, it's like, why does Spotify do editorial? Apple does editorial, but not a single other podcast app does editorial, which I've been complaining about for years. Do editorial. Have an opinion.
We should do editorial.
Have an opinion. What
do
you mean we?
Should we do editorial? Podcast Index.
Oh, do you want to be hated? I'm not interested in that.
Oh, we're already hated, right? I mean, like, pick a topic.
I have no time to do editorial for Podcast Index.
I mean, I don't mean we would actually do it. I mean, we would like throw an LLM at it and just pretend we're doing it.
Just to get taken out for drinks, basically.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, sure. Yeah, no. We would be just as effective as the Podcast Academy or whatever that is.
No, but. But isn't that the truth, though? I have never understood this. For some reason, podcast app developers, and maybe it is the I don't want to be hated thing, but if you want to delight your users, you know, then look at what your users are doing and do editorial. Everyone else is doing it. The Spotify and Apple literally are pushing shows that they think are good. You can be your one-man editorial team. And you can delight your users with all kinds of suggestions. No one does that. There's this kind of like, well, it has to be equal for all, Mom. I'm like, no. No, if you want your app to be successful, you have to have other things. And those other things are highlight, spotlight, blue light, moonlight, whatever you want to do. Rachel Maddow app. Hello. I've been saying this forever. This is exactly what it should be.
One day somebody's just going to vibe code a Rachel Maddow app and stick it in the app store or something. And it'll just be for you. It'll be your special app.
Yeah, it'll never get through the app stores. Do you have Rachel Maddow's permission to do this?
Well, you know, that's an interesting topic because I don't know what other podcast app developers are seeing out there. But on the Godcaster side of things, Paul has been telling us that app store approvals are taking longer and longer, and he thinks it's got to do with just being overrun with slop, like AI.
Oh, very good point. Yeah, I'll bet. Well, we know from customers that the I call them the wrapper apps, but what are they called? Container apps. I think that's what they're called.
Yeah, yeah. Well, something like that.
Yeah. They're having a real hard time.
And what you're describing is like somebody just takes your website and essentially wraps an app around it.
Yeah.
But it's really just pulling your content off of your WordPress. Or
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah. You have to have a certain amount of unique qualities in the app or native qualities. But then they also run bots and algos across the whole app store and say, well, this is pretty similar to this one. You know, it's become very difficult.
Which is kind of infuriating to me on one level because I've written a couple of iOS apps in the past. I've never written an Android app, but I've definitely done a couple of iOS apps. And at the time that one of them that I did was for a company I worked for, and we did a lot of recruiting of like college students to get them into our industry.
Yeah.
And so we would do a lot of work with that. And then, so I wrote this app. Essentially it was an app focused on it was branded with our business, but it was all like it was a recruiting app, and we would, it was a way that the recruits could install our app and see what our upcoming events were going to be and all this kind of stuff and register. And I was, it took a ton of work. I spent weeks writing this app and it worked great. It had a server back end to do all this kind of stuff. And then, and Apple just flat rejected it. They were like, this is just a promotional advertisement for your business.
Yeah. Isn't that the whole idea?
I was like, well, but no, it's got all this functionality to it. I mean, like, this is no different than, you know, any sort of like event registration type app. Like there's tons of examples of this. Like, no, sorry. Like you, it made me so. And then you just have these wrapper apps. Yeah. Like you're talking about that just really just wrap a website and stick it out there and somehow they just sail through. I don't know.
Yeah. You know, if they hadn't been such a-holes about, web apps, we wouldn't have this problem. If you could just install a web app as simply as an app from the App Store, which was the original idea, when Steve, it was when I met Steve Jobs.
Did you say that when Tina complained about the sheets? Like, listen here, when I met Steve Jobs. She's like, don't hit me with your Steve Jobs crap again.
I'm going to do that.
Whatever with your Steve Jobs.
When I met Steve Jobs, this was the iPod Touch days. This was the device. This was the dream. The iPod Touch, it would not be connected to a phone network, and it would be web apps. That was the whole idea, and it was a really good idea. But when I met Steve Jobs, he was yelling at people. They fucked up Wi-Fi. I was so mad. I'm not sure exactly what they messed up with Wi-Fi, but something had happened with Wi-Fi, with the protocol, or how it switched. I'm not sure exactly what it was that his dream was crumbling. And this is why he had to eventually do a deal with AT&T. And AT&T, as you recall, was the first partner that they rolled out the iPhone. You couldn't get it for any other network. It had to be AT&T. And he also never wanted an app store, which in hindsight, is you know, a huge moneymaker, the app store. And I think you're right. I mean, the way we're suffering, or slash that, the way you're suffering from the generated slop, you know, that they've got to be inundated with this stuff. But it's to the point where people can't even get a developer account approved within 5 days. It takes some have been waiting for months.
The last app release on Android that Paul did, I think it took over a week to get approved.
Oh, really? Oh, my goodness.
Didn't it?
It took a while, yeah.
It took a while. And maybe not over a week, but it was close. I mean, it was quite a number of days. And that's a definite downturn, or what, I don't know the right word. That's a definite increase in time, like in recently, because it was much quicker before.
Yeah. Listen to this. What? I think I've received my first Boost spam.
Oh, cool.
So thanks, Eric PP. Now that I put my my split in the my node in the split, here's what I got. Orangefriend.com. Find the best rates to swap to from Bitcoin on LN and other cryptos. Compare instant exchanges and P2P markets now with no KYC prepaid cards. Satogram is what it's called. It's a Satogram.
How much was it?
One Satoshi.
I am a huge fan of this. You can spam my Lightning node all you want. Just wear it out.
Yeah.
I love it. Yes. Paying me to spam me? Oh yeah. Bring it on, baby.
Yeah, eventually those sats will be worth something.
We're so back.
Woo! We're so back. Chad F in the hairpin. Very nice.
I mean, like, one of the big non-podcast stories this week was about Tim Cook retiring.
Yeah.
And I just, like...
Well, Marco will be happy. He thought Tim Cook was a huge traitor to liberalism.
Well, I feel like this. If you look across, everybody's acting like Tim Cook was... I don't care. Who cares? But just seeing a point that's made over and over is everybody is saying, well, you know, no matter what you think about Tim Cook, he was like a business genius who will never be matched again because of him taking Apple, you know, up to being a $4 trillion market cap. Man, this is, if you look across the whole tech industry, there's many companies that have had a hockey stick over the last 15 years. This is a ton of these humongous behemoth tech companies have had, quote, runs that they'll never have again, unquote. I mean, like, because it's not about necessarily being any particular genius.
Well,
I'm not saying he's bad at his job. I'm just saying that, like, when you literally spend almost $1 trillion in stock buybacks, you're going to shoot that number is going to go way up.
Well, also he's a supply chain guy, so he did really good things with the supply chain. So Eric PP says you can actually turn stuff off. Oh, that's very cool, man. So you can, if you want to, you can turn that stuff off.
You turn what off?
Spam. You can turn spam off under a certain number. Hide boost amounts below. Yeah, see, there you go.
Oh, you got a threshold.
Oh, yeah. Well, this is, of course, this is a helipad. This is one of the best pieces of software in the universe.
This is, it's a spam assassin for boost. There's probably one dude out there still running spam assassin on like a box in his closet.
You know, the other day, I had one of those moments where I'm like, I should probably check and see if if I really got all the Bitcoin off of that old laptop, you ever done one of those?
And, yeah, where you have a panic moment. Yeah.
Well, it's just like, you know, because I famously sold 65 Bitcoin at $900. Like, let me just go see. And so it was Bitcoin Core QT running on a MacBook Air.
Sweet.
So it wouldn't even connect to peers or anything. But I'm like, oh, okay. I can see, you know, I could see all the addresses. And yeah, there was like 19 sats here or there. But then there was all these transfers to AC Android wallet. I'm like, huh, I wonder.
Oh, like, you have a mystery wallet
like
somewhere.
30 Bitcoin. Like, I gotta find this thing. And so I'm talking to Tina, and this is before the whatever. This is when she was maybe that's the reason for the whatever at the end of this story. Yeah. And I said, an Android phone. So this must have been around 2013. An Android.
You keep phone. All your old devices though.
Every
much, right?
single one. And she says, well, when I was dating you, I remember you had been to the strip joint and your Nokia E71 was left in the Uber. I said, okay, so the E71. So
how can you make it rain with Bitcoin at the strip club? That's not
well, no, but this was the Nokia. She was just trying to help me identify devices. Okay. And I know, like, that
baby, trust me, I got Bitcoin. I'll send it to you.
And then this was like the Yellow Rose. It was some business thing. I wasn't really really going for the strippers. Uh-huh. And so I was like, okay. And I said, but I had an iPhone and an iPhone 4, and I'm not quite sure what came after that. So, you know, I go into the bin and literally the phones are in order. The Nokia E71, the iPhone 4, and right in between that was an old Pixel.
Bingo.
I mean, how awesome is that? And she said, I will never complain ever again about you keeping all of your old crap if you find 30 yeah. Bitcoin on this thing.
I bet.
Yeah,
I bet.
Yeah. Well, I guess what? Zero. 0.00. Of course. 0.00.
Oh yeah. We all have the story of selling a bit. Like I sold 6 Bitcoin at $1,800 and thought I was a genius. Yeah. It's, you know, whatever.
Yes. So
live and learn.
So this is interesting. RSS payment boost, true fans. Okay, true fans is coming through a little odd, but it's coming through. Cook missed every tech cycle. Search, AI, EV, and glasses. Also cloud, and the list goes on. Not a genius. He is Apple's Ballmer.
Well, here's this. That's a Sam Sethi thing if I've ever heard one. Yeah. Yes.
Now, here's the only thing about this new guy, and unfortunately, his name has too many syllables. You know, Steve Jobs, Tim Cook. This guy came. He has like too many syllables in his last name. I don't remember what is his last name.
Turnus.
Okay, it's gonna be hard. Yeah. John Turnus. Is it John Turnus?
John Turnus.
John Turnus. So he's the hardware guy. Well, that's interesting. Because if I've learned anything over the past 18 months, particularly in the last 6, you know, Apple has their universal memory and their own silicon is highly usable for the AI.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, they've had all kinds of AI capable type chips in the phones. They may have an incredible, and they've held off, you know, it's like they've had a few missers. They've pulled back from the AI nonsense, and boy, I can't blame them, because that Samsung that I got yesterday, all of a sudden was like, hi, I'm Bixby.
Oh, it's some stupid AI agent.
Yeah. Would you like for me to recognize you talking to me automatically? No. And get off. And you can't even take it off the phone. Bixby. That's the Samsung AI. Okay. Bixby.
Everybody has got, every company is making some agent and giving it some stupid cutesy name. It's, I can't, you should ask our agent, to Todd. Something. I was like, I don't want to. I'm not going to talk to your agent by name. Just quit it.
Yeah,
just
exactly. But I'm seeing the revolution unfolding. You know, this new. I haven't been able to test it. The DeepSeek V4. It's there's a cloud tag on Olama. It's not actually there yet. This thing's going to be pretty interesting with 1 million token context.
I haven't even heard of this one.
Yeah. Yeah. DeepSeek V4. Let me see. The V4 Pro, 1.6 trillion parameters. Yeah, 1.6 trillion parameters. V4 Flash, 284 billion parameters, 13 billion active. Open weight, MIT license, 1 million token context window. Trained on domestic Chinese chips. This could be something very interesting.
God, these are huge. These models are giant.
I mean, but you. So I've really become.
God, a 1.6 trillion parameter model.
Yeah, that's pretty big. But, you know, this, what is it, together.ai? They're the ones that have been most stable for me of all the rented GPU outfits. This has changed my life. Mm. You know, it's it's like, oh, there's a 5-hour senatorial testimony on C-SPAN. Okay. Robot, go download it. Download it. Okay. Run it through the fastest, most awesomest whisper model you have. Do word by word. Throw the JSON onto your drive. And then summarize. All right. You got a summary. All right. Well, that sounds interesting. What, any good fun quotes you can get there for some clips? Pew! You know, and that costs 15 cents an hour.
Yeah, and all you would have to do then is just publish it to Spreaker and you can start getting ad revenue.
No, but the point is, so if you want to use a model like this, you can run it pretty efficiently from, and I don't even know what together dot, I don't even know what their model is, their business model. I'm sure you're using some dude's gaming computer. Isn't that kind of what they all are?
Yeah, you know the new thing, right,
with what?
Trying to remember what they call it. It's distributed proxy. I can't remember the name, but
well,
what it is like
the serverless inference is one of the catchphrases.
No, this is a scam tactic where you sign up for something and you're giving a third party access to use your computer as a proxy.
Yes.
So that nefarious actors can distribute their workload and not come from known data center autonomous system numbers.
That's also cool. Yes.
Yeah. This is people are cracking down on this all over the place because people are using it like you installing Roku apps that have this thing embedded in it. Suddenly your television is being used for a proxy for a bot army.
Yeah, that's good.
And then bingo, Bitwarden gets popped.
Yeah, how about that, huh?
Yeah, I mean, this stuff is probably coming through these distributed proxy networks now. As their attack vector because they're so like it's all over the world. And what we do in the Podcast Index, you know, we block a ton of traffic coming off of data centers. We do a lot of, heuristic looking at traffic that's coming from a data center, that's coming from an IP that's related to an autonomous system number, which is connected to a data center provider. And so, like, if you have a browser user agent, mm-hmm. if you're claiming to be Chrome, but you're coming from AWS.
Yeah, you're no good. Block. You're no good. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, you're not Chrome. You know, you're an imposter. And
one of the huge benefits of running Omarchi is, and I guess you could do it with the Mac too, but all my bot based stuff, I pipe it all through my home desktop. You know, home IP coming from a home machine looks legit.
Yeah, and I've had I'm currently moving my Freedom Controller to my house to Ubuntu or to my podcast rig.
You should run it on the same machine that's running our Albi Hub because it's working so well.
What the Albi Hub is working? Yeah. Is it not working?
Not for Comic Strip Blogger. He complained again.
Oh. What? But as wait, where? Like, I gotta see this podcast. L index LN. What? I don't understand because it's up and running. Wait, well, I've got machine two here with the, and it is running right here.
Mm-hmm.
1842. What is 1842?
I don't know what 1842 is. Was a good year for wine.
Hey, 1842.
It was a good year.
AI generated boost. Oh, well. Yeah. I don't know what to say. It's up and running. I mean, it's sitting right here doing its thing.
Anyway, so you're moving the Freedom Controller over to your own home machine.
Yeah, because everybody's doing this. Everybody's blocking data center traffic. And my Freedom Controller for many years has been running in Linode.
Right.
And so increasingly I'm getting 403 just denied.
Yeah.
And so I can't save articles into my archive anymore. So I'm going to have to move it. Luckily, we facilitated for this a long time ago, and you can use one of the things Freedom Controller can do is you can set up a bucket in S3 or somewhere, and you can hit the bucket and it'll bounce you to whatever the current IP address is of where the Freedom Controller actually is. So it's fine. It'll work just fine this way. But I don't know. It's like this is a, you know, this is becoming a real problem for attackers. So now they're going to have to figure out a way to take over residential IPs. And that's behind all of this.
They just do that in the routers, right? Aren't the routers complete pieces of crap that are just all Swiss cheese?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah. Yeah. Your router has about as much, you know, if anybody sits down with a commercial router for like residential home router for more than a day, they're going to find something. Yeah. You can just imagine that people are stripping the firmware out of those things and just running them through an LLM to find bugs right now as we're talking.
Yeah, this is a change in the world that people are not very aware of. And it's going to mean more people will be needed.
Pain,
but also more people will be needed to reconfigure everything. The whole centralized model is under attack.
Yes, the slopocalypse.
Slopocalypse. Yes.
Yeah. It's happening, and we're not ready. We're not ready for it. Yeah. We're really not. But it's so hard to find this stuff. There's going to be some amount of AI slop that really is just kind of undetectable. You can't automate your way around it. I mean, I've been focused almost squarely on this for a couple of, 2-3 weeks now.
Mm-hmm.
And I can tell you that, I'm in model training mode right now. That's the next step. And that's what I'm working through. It is complicated.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, we can talk about it if you want to.
Well, I just want to answer Cotton Gin. He's in the boardroom. Mm-hmm. What even is slop? By the way, whenever I play an AI-generated song on No Agenda in the end of show mix, he's the first one to say, AI minus. So you clearly know what it is. Slop is... Slop is what pigs eat. And it's usually a lot of the same of it. I think that's the definition.
And this is the thing that we can't ever get around. And I'm talking about more than just technology. This goes all the way back to the famous, quote of, I can't define pornography, but I know it when I see it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And there's a lot of, there are many things like this in the world. But, one thing is just language in general. You know, I forgot what we were talking about last week, but it brought up this idea. It reminded me of Noam Chomsky's work on language.
Mm-hmm.
And, before Noam Chomsky was the sort of anti-war
Before he was friends with Epstein, you mean?
Oh, that too. Before all that, before he was the lovable kook, his big contribution was in the world of language and philology.
Philology?
Yeah, philology.
Hold on. Book of Knowledge. Give me the definition of philology.
Really?
According to the Book of Knowledge, philology is the study of language in written historical sources, combining linguistics with literary criticism and historical analysis to understand texts and their cultural contexts. Thus, it has been written.
Hey, can I vibe code or what?
It would be like, I can't help wishing that sounded like the priest from Monty Python and the Holy Grail, reading from the Book of Armaments.
I think I got it where I wanted it to be.
That one caught me off guard. Has that been on No Agenda? Because I was not aware of this.
Yeah, I introduced it a couple shows ago. So I have a little interface with a push to talk button, and it's piped in exactly the way I want it. And to bridge over the super fast whisper, but then the FFmpeg process, which takes the voice and then adds the echo to it. I added the little page scribbling. I'm dangerous with this stuff.
That's A+. That's A+ work, brother.
Thank you. Yes, we know what it is.
This is why I don't listen to No Agenda, because I like being surprised by your antics.
Philology. Okay.
But that's where Chomsky's chops came from. Sharpened up his chops was in language.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what he said, what his big contribution was. And I think it's still pretty much the defining characteristic of language neurology, is that he said that language appears to be something built into us. Like, it's not something that is learned.
Mm-hmm.
So you could say, okay, is language a general knowledge thing where we learn it the same way we learn how to drive a car, or the same way that we learn how to put silverware in a certain order on a table? And he says no. That language is something that's unique. It's wired into the human mind in a way that it seems to be pre-existing.
Mm.
So you could say that humans are born with the faculty or the property of language construction. That we understand I think the term that he used was universal grammar. And he said that this spans all different languages. So on the outside, it may look like Mandarin Chinese and Italian are completely...
But on the inside, it's really all tokenized. Is that what you're getting?
It's all token. Yeah. Yeah. It's an API. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But it looks like from the outside, those are completely different languages. But what's happening in the mind is something that Chomsky called universal grammar.
Mm-hmm.
So it's this idea that you have a universal set of rules that have we all share the structure. No matter what the overarching language is, we all operate on a subject, an object, and a verb. And other parts of grammar, that even though they may be in a different order where they may be a little bit different. We all understand what these things are, you know?
Yeah.
And so, I don't know if I said this before, but it's sort of like a, like mere Christianity. Like there's a lot of different theologies, lots of different doctrines, all these kinds of things. But the core of what Christianity is like these two or three things.
Yeah. Like Jesus, come quickly. Everyone in Christianity is thinking that.
Yeah. 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 It's just, you know, so there's, that's when it comes to language, as I'm working through the train, this how to train this model thing, I'm beginning to sort of see the pattern here that goes back to what we were talking about earlier, which is these things are hard to define, but we know what they are. If I gave flashcards to everyone in the boardroom and said, and gave them 20 flashcards and said, okay, and then played 14 seconds of each podcast and said, okay, here's the art, here's the title, here's the description of the podcast, and here's 14 seconds of audio. 20 out of 20 would identify every single one of them perfectly as either AI slop or just a normal podcast.
I agree.
But now when you try to take that and put it into a definition, LLM,
into a model,
it is that you hit a barrier. And I think that the issue has something to do, like, so we've talked about Jacques Ellul, you know, we've talked about Jacques Ellul before.
Yes, a good old many Jacques. Times. Yes.
Yes. Professor Jacques. he's an interesting guy. He had, you know, his two seminal works, Technological Society and Propaganda. One of the key takeaways from his work, Propaganda, is that if you're trying to convince someone or a group of people that your idea is correct, if that's what you're doing as your propaganda, then what you're doing is not propaganda, or you're not very good at it.
Right.
Because attempts at propaganda by someone who's not good at it, they'll try to do that. They'll try to like explain to you why they are right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But what he says is propaganda is not about ideas. It's about actions. Real propaganda does not care about the ideas in any shape, form, or fashion. They change over time. They're different every day. The news cycle changes. It's all kind of irrelevant. All that matters is whether you drive a particular outcome, an action. If you can say a thing and then that provokes an action in the listener, done. Your job is done. That is propaganda.
Would you like to hear a readout of one of my agents that searches for YouTube videos and has been trained to avoid AI slop videos?
Sure.
Okay, red flags, telltale AI phrasing. So it only does it on Whisper transcripts. Personally, I think, let me break this down. What many people don't realize, if you take a step back and think about it, one thing that immediately stands out, from my perspective, what this really suggests is...
deep dive.
Mm-hmm, red flags in the channel. No real person or camera or identifiable name or title, generic aggregator channel names, stock footage with TTS narration, monotone, flat, overly uniform anchor voice, synthetic rhythm, no natural reading errors, no pacing variations. The rule, scan first few lines of transcript before anything. If the patterns are there, don't cut the audio. The content might still be useful research, but the AI voice never goes on air. Adam caught 7 AI slop clips on NA 1857, rejected them all on content. So that's how my agent is now identifying this stuff, which sounds kind of human-esque, really.
Yeah, and the issue is now do that for, you know, a few hundred podcasts an
hour. A minute, an hour.
Yeah, exactly. And so this is the problem. So when you're restricted to only sort of like when you're restricted to only language, mm-hmm. and you don't have the processing horsepower to listen to all the audio. Mm-hmm. It is very difficult,
but isn't it amazing though that with 3 watts that powers my entire brain, I can do it in seconds.
And this was Chomsky's genius, was that it's not math.
No,
you know, the way our minds work is not a math problem. And
It's a meth problem.
Sometimes, yes. I think the nature of what if you take sort of what Jacques Ellul was saying, he's saying that action. And the words and actions are they share sort of a congruent relationship. They function together. Words drive action, mm-hmm. and action drives words. They have a relationship that is mysterious, but it is there. You know, when we talk to people we have relationships with, it really matters what the ideas are, because we want to be on the same page with each other.
Yeah.
In a way that something like propaganda doesn't care. Propaganda just cares about actions, but we don't when we're having real relationships. You know, there's this fundamental paradox with language that the words themselves sort of don't matter, but at the same time, they very much do. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really what you bump up against when you try to make a definition, because in one sense, the definition of something that is so hard to put your finger on, like in the one sense, the words don't matter because words are kind of fungible. Like the English word is five, but in the Spanish word is cinco. I mean, mm-hmm. like they're interchangeable. Also, the meaning of words change over time.
So the words are
a conduit for meaning, and that conduit can take many different shapes: square, round, oval, whatever. Essentially, the language is not the point. The ideas are, the meanings are the point. But then there's this other aspect where the words themselves are incredibly important. Like, in fact, they're critical. So on the broader scope, the words don't matter. But when it comes to conveying the meaning to another person or another language, passing sort of the utility of those words you choose are a critically important aspect of it. Mm-hmm. So there is like a fundamental paradox that exists within language. And this is why I brought up the propaganda reference, because when it comes to propaganda, word choice is everything, because the actions you desire as outcomes from your words were as a result of the emotional stirring
of those words that you use,
of those words that you deliver as they sound to the hearer. Mm-hmm. You know, so like a good example of this. If you think back to the election of this most recent election of Trump, one of my favorite examples is J.D. Vance. There was sort of like when he was nominated as a running mate, all the typical attacks started, political attacks. And the one thing that came up was that people started calling him, quote, weird.
Yes. Unquote.
Yep. Do you remember that?
Yeah, of course.
Weird is a word that young people use to mean that a person makes them sexually uncomfortable. I have kids. That is when they say the word that, when they say that person is weird, that is what they mean by that. Mm. That is not something that older people without kids would, or people with older kids would be familiar with. Mm-hmm. But that when, like, if a young kid is watching like a movie with a sex thing, they're like, oh, that's weird. That is what they mean. You would, and so like, you're only going to know this if you have children that are like in their mid 20s or younger. And so research definitely went into the use of that word, and it was chosen to convey that exact meaning to that generation of people. You know, so like, the language evokes actions is one aspect of it. The language, and then the meanings, though, that the words convey can change over time. So as I'm going through this model training thing, I hit this point when I'm interacting with the LLM where it asks me, like, it says, do you want me to spot check the output of blah, blah, blah that it's doing? And I just stopped. I'm like, what does that mean, spot check? Like, what does it mean? I have no idea. Like, does it mean it's going to look at something and tell me that it's right? But in what parameters? Like, what? Like, this is the problem. It's trained on our language.
Yeah.
And so it's talking like us.
It's trying to communicate something to you.
But when I say, hey, Adam, do you want me to spot check this? You can instantly get it. You have an understanding of what I mean, but just innately. You don't, there's, we're on the same page just by default. But when the machine asks me, do you want me to spot check it? I was just sort of paralyzed for a minute.
I think you might be overthinking it. Doesn't it mean exactly the same thing as if I said it to you?
No, because what if I say yes? It says, do you want me to spot check this data?
Yeah.
If I say yes, what am I communicating to it? I'm not sure. Because if I say yes, is it going to say, what is it going to then do?
What would you expect it? What would you expect it to do?
But see, here's the question. But the question though is, this is the action part. This is the part that I'm getting to, is that if I say yes, and it and without knowing exactly what it intends to do, what is it going to do?
Well, hold on a sec. If you said it to me. Now, if I said to you, do you want me to spot check this, Dave? And you said yes, what would you expect me to do? And why would you know what I was suggesting?
So we would have a context, right?
Mm-hmm.
If I'm saying, if you say, hey, Dave, this feed is not updating in the index. And I think that there may be a few more of this type of feed that are not updating. Can you spot check that?
Okay.
I would immediately know what you are communicating to me and what actions you expect me to take.
Okay. So apply that to your example. You were doing something and the LLM says, do you want me to spot check this? What was the process you were doing?
Right. And so what I have found through this process is the process of model training is that a good 90% of the work of model training goes into preparing your data correctly, your training data set. The having an excellent training data set is literally 90% of the job.
Mm.
And to get that, I've had to go through a lot of steps. The first one was building what James wanted, which was the dead feed, problematic feed export.
Mm-hmm.
That is now built and is functioning. And so I can't release it really as a public link, I don't think, because it's got DMCA stuff in there we've been asked to remove. So I don't think we can release that publicly, but I think it would be okay to release it to research purposes. So somebody would have to like contact me and ask for it, I think.
Chad F says, hey, Adam, can you spot check this boostergram? Done. Context understood. Human to human communication complete.
Yeah. And so, so if somebody wants it, James or anybody else, you know, call me, we'll work it out. I'll work out how to get it to you. So that was step one. And as I'm working through what it required was to put a bunch of new SQL exports statements into the index to get all this data out in the correct way, and then export it into a SQLite database, just like the other one. What I wanted is two SQLite databases, the standard SQLite database that we export every week, and this new problematic database that we're going to use as the test corpus for the bad feeds.
Yeah.
And so as I'm going through this,
you know, you're going to get criddled on this.
That's okay. That's fine.
He's like, podcast index is deplatforming people. This is wrong.
I've been criddled before and I'll be criddled again. That's fine. It's not a problem. So as I'm working through this, I exported the data and there was a problem in that the SQLite database initially came out like corrupt, but the LLM gave me a list of issues. It was like the SQLite database is unreadable, but also the CSV that we exported was missing a field. He gave me like four or five different things that were wrong. And then it asked me if it wanted me to do X, Y, and Z and spot check the data. And I'm like,
what?
I don't know what you're referring to.
Yeah.
And it said it in such a way that I was left with the impression that if I say yes, then it's going to perform an action that I may or may not want. And I'm like, man, this is vague. I don't know what we're doing here anymore. So this is all part and parcel to just the difficult. This is all part and parcel of the difficulty of saying to of having to describe something that is basically indescribable. Like you, what your example was, you gave a list of things. You say, you know, this tone, this kind of, you know, these phrases.
I didn't actually give it that list. It came up with that list itself. I didn't give it that. Yeah.
Well, you came up with a set of heuristic phrases.
No, I didn't. It did itself.
It did. Okay, excuse me.
Based upon a feedback loop of me saying probably 10 times that's AI slop.
Okay. And we're all, to a certain extent, going through this same exercise. We're trying to come up with heuristics.
Yeah.
To identify some stuff. But what we're going to end up with, and this is always how heuristics works, what we're going to end up with is the same thing that happened in phishing scams. The way that any adversary, and I'm going to consider AI in this example, I'll consider AI slop our vague adversary. The way any adversary combats heuristics is they shrink the sample size. They make it smaller and smaller and smaller, until there's just simply not enough information there for you to pass a confidence threshold.
Mm-hmm.
And that sample size in something like email spam or email phishing can just be the number of words they use.
Yeah.
So they may just pig butchering, perfect example.
Yeah.
Hey, did you go, are you going to be at the tennis practice today?
Yeah.
There's simply not enough information there.
Yeah.
There's just not. But when you're dealing with something like AI produced podcasts, well, now you have many variables. You have you have all the metadata that goes into the podcast itself. You have the voice of the AI slot presenter. You have the content. There's tons of variables you can push and pull around, but for each one of those, there's a set of heuristics involved, and you can refine it down over time to a point where it is indistinguishable. Because if I get on, this is what I've been learning all week this week. What I'm trying to do is create what's called a LoRa adapter, LoRa. So the way this will work is
that a Lord of the Rings adapter?
Yeah. LO, I think it stands for, I cannot remember what that
Book of
for.
Knowledge. What does LoRa stand for in AI? Oh, it's having a hard time.
According to the Book of Knowledge, LoRa stands for Low Rank Adaptation, a parameter-efficient fine-tuning technique for large language models and other deep neural networks. Thus, it has been written.
Low Rank Adaptation.
That's it. That's it.
Okay. Nailed it.
So,
good work.
So you, the LoR, the LoRa adapter is a way to add information into a language model, into a base model.
Mm.
And you're making adjustments to the weights themselves.
This is fascinating. I love this.
So the quote unquote, the weights, you're really talking about, blocks of, you can think of an LLM as a stack, sort of. It's like a stack of matrices. There's that are layered into each other, and those layers are distributed in blocks across the model. And one of the parts of the model is which is the best name in all of computer science, is the perceptron.
Perceptron.
Yeah. So you have the attention layer, which feeds into a forwarding function, and then that goes into a perceptron or a MTP layer. And essentially, all it is it sounds fancier than it really is. It's just it's a block of matrices that try to make associations with the attention between words.
Hmm.
So it really is just matrix math, right? So the LoRa adapter is a set of matrices that you pull out of a training data set, and then you add them into the LLM server, so something like Llama CPP or VLLM, you add that LoRa adapter in and to the serving harness, and then it will do an additive function to add those new blocks into the matrices of the large language model.
Wow.
It essentially puts it through it.
The serving harness?
Yeah, so like something like, you can think of like an agent harness would be something like Claude Code or Open Code.
Okay, okay.
The server harness would just be, you know, the same thing on the server side.
Mm-hmm, okay.
So it's not changing the base model. So you're going to take a model or something like Qwen 3.6 or something like that. Like, let's say you take Qwen 3.6 35B model. It's a mixture of experts model, 3 billion active parameters. You're going to take that model as your base, and then you are going to essentially take another set of weights that are trained on your own data set.
And you put that in front of it.
You put that beside it. So now that it's now every time it does every time it runs through the perceptron, it is also going to add these other weights into the mix in a way that sort of nudges the output token in a certain direction. And the good thing about this, which is really nice, is you don't have to change doing it this way. You're not retraining the entire model. You're just adding this extra component, and that extra component is small. It's, you know, 500 megs or less. And you can just swap it out. So you can train a new one every month if you wanted to.
Oh, very
just
cool.
Add that in. Yeah. So like if you, the reasons you would want to do this are specificity or high customization, because you can do things like this with like RAG, or, you know, retrieval augmented generation, where you take a database of content and sort of mix, you mix that you run the output through the RAG as a filter on the on sort of the output side, or you could pile everything into the prompt, into the context window, which you quickly run out of space.
Right.
But the LoRa adapter, this would be called fine tuning the model. This, if you do this well, and it can fail, it can easily fail if you don't have the right training data. Eric says, is this better than old machine learning techniques like random forest or neural nets? Now, transformer models are really just an evolution of neural networks. So this is going to, it's very similar.
Well, I think I have a different question. Between the server harness and the LoRa, when is the last time you took Melissa on a date?
There will be no dates until school's out.
I'm just saying. Before you get a whatever.
Luckily, I've changed the sheets. That's my job. So I will not have to. I do not have to worry about it.
Nanny. All right.
Good question, though. It's been a while. Mm-hmm. We're due.
Just saying.
As soon as school's out.
Mm-hmm.
Eric, it handles language better because it's built for that sort of, you know, tokenized input. But the training, if you do it right, if you do it wrong, here's what can happen. If your training set is poor, or if it's too small or too big, you can end up just making the model memorize things. So really, to make sure that you're doing a good job of this, you have to do a lot of testing on the backside.
Spot checks.
Spot checks, yes. You have to do a lot of testing to make sure that it's not just memorizing the training data.
Yes.
And that, because what you're looking for is a balance of weighting of word connections. And so the best way I saw this explained was, you can think of a well-balanced model. You can do the underlying matrix math. Yes, exactly, Eric. That's right. It's called overfitting. You can do the underlying matrix math, and you can literally come out with and see a visual representation of king is to man what queen is to woman. Mm-hmm. Like, you can say, you can take the relationship in the matrix of king to male, and then you can do the exact same math on the word queen, and it will predict that it's going to be woman.
Okay.
So that's a good sort of like,
what is woman?
Let's not,
Supreme Court justices can't answer that.
Yeah. But if you overtrained it, you may end up with, you know, Queen equals Elizabeth.
Yes.
See what I'm saying? Like you would end up with a model that has memorized the training set. And so this is where we're headed. If I can do this right, we will end up with a highly customized model that is an expert at identifying slop.
Wow.
Not just slop, but slop and spam and malicious content, these kinds of things. All these things we don't want. We can have an expert that can hit those things and identify them in a way that is forward moving, whereas just doing it the way that we're doing at the moment by piling more and more and more stuff into the context window is just not scalable.
Right. And then eventually this will wind up as an endpoint that people can query, or a flag, or something that can be used by people who use the index. That's the idea, isn't it?
Oh, it already is. I mean, like the reason. So if you hit the problematic endpoint right now, report recent problematic endpoint, you can already see what it was classified as and a short text about the reason.
Is that open, or do you have to have a key for that?
You gotta have a key for it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And so what it's doing is it's train. So taking all that into, you know, taking all that context in, what I've been hitting is the training set design is so complex. I'm aiming for about 25,000 quote good podcasts.
Oh, but, good ones. Okay, good ones. Yeah. Yes.
So those need to range across all the different ways that we know that they do.
Wow. Oh, okay.
That's everything from. Yeah, everything from Joe Rogan to
Øystein Berge.
To Øystein Berge. Yeah, exactly. Øystein Berge. To Bowls with Buds.
Mm-hmm.
To Pod News Weekly Review. To mm-hmm. a person reading a bedtime story on Buzzsprout.
Mm-hmm.
Teenager reading their term paper on Anchor.
Yeah.
All of those are really... All of those are legit podcasts.
Yeah.
But then somehow identify the difference between a 17-year-old in Delhi reading their report from school and differentiate that as good against an AI generated voice on Spreaker reading a bunch of history nonsense off of Wikipedia.
Right. Wow. That's an interesting challenge.
Yes, it is it has been a challenge. And I mean, I think I still got a few weeks to go.
Wow.
Realistically, it's probably going to take another 2 or 3 weeks to get the first shot at this. Because if your training data set is wrong, or if it's poor, you're just going to end up training the model that everything from Spreaker is bad.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that's not true. You know?
Well,
that's
kind of is.
It's like,
kind
you
of.
Know, or like
if Spreaker and the other, here's what would probably help. If they put a flag in, this is a free account, that would probably be a good signal for your training.
Let me give you a great example. Copy link. Here you go. Here's one.
Is it a number I can call as James?
No, I don't think so. There's no numbers in this one. Okay. I'll find one of those.
If you care about predictions and props, right now, of course, it's all pre-rolls, about playoff pressure from the hardwood.
Always.
Pre-roll. Okay, hold on.
Always two pre-rolls.
But here's the twist. Oh. We're only going...
AI. Within three seconds. Yeah. Hold on, let's see.
And I'm Luna. So oh, excited. For-
now at McDonald's, a McDouble is $2.50. So you can get your gym gains on. Right. Or just get lunch. For only $2.50.
I can't shuttle. It's almost here. Hold on. Yeah, yeah, McDonald's. All right. They made some money off of us. All right, here we go.
Hey, welcome back to Learn Tamil with Vexingo. I'm Lucas.
And I'm Luna. So excited for episode 13.
Okay, slop.
Yeah, we've been on a roll. Today, I thought we'd do something a little different.
Oh, goodness. Hold on, let me do something here. Analyze this podcast. AI slop or not? I'm just going to give it to my robot. It'll take a minute. Obviously, you know, my robot is nothing like your building. But anyone who's listening heard that right away.
Oh yeah, that's what I'm saying. This is the difference between the built-in language and emotional action comprehension that humans have versus machines. We just know things, and we don't know how we know them. We just do.
Yeah.
We just know, and nobody can explain nobody can explain how. But everybody's going to pass that test. Every single one of us. But AI is really going to struggle with this. And
right off the bat, it'll struggle with the ad.
Exactly. Oh, great point.
It has to get past the ads.
Great point.
I wonder if my robot will figure that out.
Well, and this, so here's sort of the last kind of point I want to make is I think here is an Achilles heel of how we discuss these things today. We tend to think about AI in terms of what it's not capable of doing or where its flaws are right now. And I think that is just, I think that is very short-sighted.
Hmm.
What I think we have to do, and this is why I'm trying to do it this way. What I think we have to do is assume that these AI generated podcasts are going to get so good that we cannot tell the difference. We have to assume that they are going to eventually be perfect in their tone. In their word choice, they're going to evade any sort of detection. This is what I meant by saying they're just going to reduce the attack surface.
Mm.
They're going to stop doing the things that sound unnatural, and the uncanny valley is going to shrink down to such a small degree that we're not going to be able to just do heuristics on them. What we're going to have to do is look at the whole thing in a Bayesian way, where we're taking things into account that they can't stop.
Would you like the verdict here from my robot?
Yeah, sure.
Almost certainly AI slop. The evidence: 55 red flags. 55 podcasts across every major language. No human operation produces 55 language courses. That's a content farm. 2 warm voices. Exactly 2 TTS voices across all 55 languages. Real language instruction requires native speakers for each language. Hosted on Spreaker, huh? See, I told you. It says, hosted on Spreaker, one of the platforms Dave flagged for hosting and cloned spam feeds on last week's show. Holy crap.
No team, no instructor's name, no methodology, no credentials, completely anonymous. Generic Fexingo branding across all 55. Template operation, learn, insert language with Fexingo for every single one. Zero information about who runs it, no company, location, no people, just an email address. The math, 55 languages times even 10 episodes each, 550 episodes of audio with two voices, that's TTS. The pattern matches exactly what we screened for. Generic channel names, no identifiable humans, and possibly broad output from a tiny operation, and a template applied across dozens of instances. This is a podcast spam farm using AI-generated TTS language lessons to harvest ad revenue across 55 ads on Spreaker. Textbook slop.
Okay. Great analysis, but let me throw a twist in there.
Okay.
One of the things I've been seeing a ton of lately are people taking LibriVox recordings, reposting them on Spreaker to get the ad revenue.
Okay. So that's theft.
Well, not legally, because LibriVox uses a public domain license. So you can really, they've literally say you can do whatever you want with it. Okay. We will not stop you.
All right.
So legally it's fine. Except that you're going to have 100 different people posting the same exact thing over and over and over and over again. Here's what I would actually enjoy, because LibriVox, since it's volunteers, many of the recordings are horrible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's actually an improvement.
A really well done AI narrator. Like a high quality, AI narrator would be better than many of the LibriVox recordings. And I would prefer to listen to the AI version
right.
if it was well done than I would the LibriVox human version.
But aren't we now down to what I've always said is some people will actually want this for certain reasons. And that's a very individual. We all need our own
Perceptron.
I need my own perceptron. Yes.
So, but see, and this is the issue, is like, just because it's AI generated does not mean that it's slop and nobody wants it. But if you ask somebody, is this slop, they will be able to tell you.
Sir Bemrose
will be able to tell you, and for reasons they don't even themselves know.
Sir Bemrose has a good point. One of the most powerful signals for AI slop is that the podcast has ads.
Yeah, and that's another thing. It's like you don't want to overtrain on that either.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, because then the model will be like, oh yeah, it's got ads, must be slop.
Yeah,
but that's not true. And if there was a really well done AI voiced version of Frankenstein, Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, that was way better than the LibriVox recording, I would not only enjoy it and want to listen to it, but also not mind if it had pre-rolls in it at all.
Well, I'm back to my point. Isn't it ultimately that we all need our own perceptron? We really do. Because you're saying things that are really important here. I wouldn't want to hear that. I want to hear some crappy Frankenstein, but I wouldn't want to be, no, I don't want to hear that. But so isn't that kind of the point where we have to be, that we all have a robot that we train for stuff that we want?
Customized. But in the interim, while there's sort of like brokers of content, like Podcast Index and Apple's podcast directory and these kinds of things, like, we can't, as a conduit, we have to be able to continue to conduit. We can't.
Yes. Yeah, true.
We can't be overrun with 700 people posting, LibriVox recordings of Frankenstein with a couple of pre-rolls. It's absurd. I think that's where it's difficult. We're going to, we can try to hit the high level and train this model to get the obvious junk, like the one I just posted a while ago about a podcast about the Denny's menu.
Yes.
That's obviously junk that nobody wants. It's the equivalent of punch the monkey ad banner in your web browser. Oh,
goodness. But those were good for a while. Those were fun. I've tried to punch the monkey. Everyone's punched the monkey. So you would actually wouldn't mind a good TTS reading of Frankenstein?
Oh, yeah. Like if it was a high quality, when TTS models get to the point where they can really deliver a good quality thing and not just be LM notebook, when we get to that point, oh yeah, I'd love it. I'd love that because I love audiobooks and I like LibriVox, but so many of the recordings are just so bad, they're hard to listen to.
So I asked my robot to find a reading of Frankenstein that is well read by TTS, good enough, even though it is AI slop. That would be a perceptron that you might program, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, it's not there yet. It's working on it.
It does
have my podcast index API key in secret.
Oh, does it? Oh, okay. I'll look forward to the server crash in a dot env file.
Don't worry. In a dot env file. So it's not posting it anywhere.
Until you get a CI/CD pipeline hack. Then it's going to be everywhere.
I don't CDCI anything.
CDCI.
Whatever. I don't do any of that stuff. Well, I hope I don't cause any problems. A lot of people have keys.
Every time I run pip install, I'm just like,
Well, isn't it with just like you said, every packet manager, NPM, all of this stuff.
Yeah, they're ticking time bombs inside your machine, just waiting to crap on your front porch.
Yeah. Well, you are doing important work.
I'm doing work. I don't know if it's important. But.
I think it is. I think it is important. Let me see. It's going to get a 2-minute sample into my show folder here so I can play it for you. I'm pretty happy with my robot.
I really want your little guy that runs out there and gets
stories and stuff.
No, not that one, but the one that just analyzed the podcast.
Oh, that's my favorite guy.
Yeah, I like that guy.
Yeah, no, that guy is good. Okay.
I want a copy of that guy so I can make it work on my behalf.
Here, my guy has got some for you.
Letters. All right. Frankenstein, or the Modern Prometheus, by Mary Wollstonecraft Shelley. This is a LibriVox recording. All LibriVox recordings are in the public domain.
Do you think that's real or is that slop?
Sounds real to me.
According to my robot, it's a TTS.
For more information or to volunteer, please visit LibriVox.org. Recording by Caden Clegg, thelunarisland.blog.
That sounds pretty real to me.
Sounds real to me.
Let me see.
Some people just sound like robots.
Yeah. No. I think
that's real.
I think it's real. Okay. We think it's real.
He's talking through a tube.
Loser robot. I have to call any AI I call a robot. It reminds me, don't get involved with this thing. It's a robot.
Yeah. Don't take it seriously.
Yeah. No, you can't. You can't. That's dangerous. Before you know it, you're saying, okay, good night. Talk to you tomorrow. You have no idea how many people are doing that, brother. It's bad. Hey, we're over time, man. I should have gotten you out eons ago. I'm sorry about
that. Yes, we're way over time.
Do you have a few minutes to do some thank yous?
Yeah, sure.
Why are you talking through a tube?
Yeah, I'm doing a LibriVox recording.
Value for Value podcast, which means we deliver the value. We hope you enjoyed today's board meeting, and we would like to receive some value back. Lots of people contribute time, talent, and treasure. And in here, we thank people throughout the show for all kinds of things they're doing. I mean, started for me right off the bat with Eric PP with the helipad, best software package in the universe. And then, of course, he also scolded me. But on the treasure side, this benefits the podcastindex.org infrastructure directly. So if you send us boostagrams or if you send us PayPals, which you can do by going to podcastindex.org, at the bottom, a big red donate button, you hit that and you can send us some fiat fun coupons. So there's 333 from Chad F. He's the asked me to spot check the boostagram. Silas on Linux, 2220. Oh, interesting. From Fountain. It might have been a row of ducks, but Fountain somehow is rounding up or down. And he says, firm weight update available. This is probably when you crashed.
that was it. Yeah.
Here I got another 59 sats. Interesting. From True Fans, co-listening and chatting with Sam Sethi, talking about beverages, tea from Assam, India, and rosé wine from Provence, France. Do ye? And it stopped at the Y.
I don't know who that cool. is. Cool. Good. Eric, so they're talking about things completely unrelated to the show.
Okay. Yes. From Podcast Guru 333 from Eric PP. Pew. Yes, we got the pew. There's the 170 sats. Fetch metadata. What is this little fetch metadata thing? Hold on. Oh, wow. Okay. I'm sorry, Eric.
What?
So. Oh, goodness gracious. This is awesome.
Share with
Eric
the class.
PP. Yes. So. On a weird lightning invoice that comes in that I wasn't able to read, there's a little button now in Helipad which says fetch metadata. And then boom, it translates it. And so now I see indeed a row of ducks, 2222 from Lyceum, co-listening with Sam Sethi talking about beverages, tea, blah, blah, blah. Do you have the ducks in a row? Cheers. So I don't know exactly what's happening, but I love it.
Cool. Yeah, whatever's happening is awesome.
Great. 6390 from Sam at truefans.fm. Yeah, that was about Cook missing every cycle. Salted Crayon 333. It's been months. Howdy, Node, he says. 333 from Chad F. This boostergram brought to you by Eric PP++. 2220 from CLOS on Linux. AI-generated boostergram spam. And okay, so then there's that actual spam I got, and now I hit the delimiter. So we're in a good place. Thanks everybody. That was fun. And Eric PP, Helipad, rocking it, man. Love it.
Trying to get my thing pulled up here. Oh, okay, there it is. What do we got here? I guess see that's. Oh, that's a. I hate the way it mixes all the PayPal stuff together. Never can get my head around that. All right, here we go. Look. Buzzsprout. $1,000.
Holy moly.
Baller. Shot caller. 20-inch blades on the Impala.
Yo, baller boys and girls from Buzzsprout. Thank you.
Thank you. Tom Rossi.
It's not even end of the month yet.
Tom Rossi, he also does conference calls.
It does. For free.
Yeah, for free. Michael Goggin, $5.
Thank you, Michael.
1,000 to five in a blink of an eye.
Woo!
Jorge Hernandez, $5. Thank you, Jorge. Christopher Reamer, $10. Thank you, Christopher. We got Cohen Glotzbach, $5. Thank you, Cohen. James Sullivan, $10. And Randall Black, $5. That's our PayPals. Let me see what we got on Boosts here. We got Oscar. Oscar Mary, 20,000 sats. He's through Fountain. He says, sorry for the disruption, guys. That's no problem.
No it worries. Happens. No worries, brother. No worries.
I will throw no stones. Mm-mm. Comic strip blogger, Delimiter, 20,000 sats through Fountain. He says, howdy, Dave and Adam. Today, I want to recommend a podcast from the podcast Morning Chat, www.podpage.com/PMC/, which is, quote, daily morning show for creators, by creators. Ever wonder how top content creators and podcasters keep their shows fresh, engaging, and profitable? The podcast Morning Chat, hosted by Mark Ronick, end quote. Suggested by Martin Lindeskog. Yo, CSP, AI Arch Wizard, $15.52 win cent.
Thank you very much, Comics for Blogger.
That's it. Everything else is just river Bitcoin spam.
So I hit my, this has not happened. It's happened twice now. Ever since the wonderful upgrade, I've hit my limit on Claude code.
Oh, did you see?
I saw that. Yeah, I saw that.
GitHub is now charging per token, and they've gotten rid of their all-you-can-eat.
GitHub is charging per token? For what does GitHub do with tokens?
GitHub Copilot.
So now I can upgrade or wait an hour and 54 minutes. What is this bull crap?
It's falling apart.
But I thought I had extra credits, man.
You credits. We need some credits.
Hey, man, I need some credits. How come you can't give me some credits? This is no good. I need credits. Resets this, at 4:10 p.m.
So predictable.
Well, I mean, I predicted this. I said it was going to happen. But now I'm
drug pusher model.
Now I'm kind of pissed. It's like, hold on, man. I can get some more money. Hold on.
Are you on the 100 plan or the 200?
I'm on the 100 plan.
Nope, got to go to the 2.
No, I don't want to go to the 2, man. It's like, I can't buy food for my mama.
This is the best way to, this is token inflation is what this is.
Tokenflation.
This is tokeflation.
Tokeflation.
It's the best, the best way to do it, because you don't actually have to raise prices. You just inflate the amount of tokens that you use with each request, and they just run out sooner. It's great.
But what I don't understand is I thought I had extra credits, man.
Your 20 becomes 100, then your 100 becomes 200, and next thing you know, bada boom, you're on the API plan.
Oh, well, the API plan, that's the one that's crazy.
Oh, you'll go broke.
Oh, goodness gracious. Oh, no. Let me just take a look at here. What is this? Billing. Here we go. Billing. Well, but I have extra credits. I am literally a whore. Let me see. Okay, man. All right.
I've never run out of tokens on the Claude $100 plan until this past week, and I hit my limit for the first time.
Yeah, so
I've changed nothing about the way I work.
It's happened twice for me today.
Yeah.
Well, this sucks.
Yeah, it's Opus 4.7. And they changed the default. If I'm not mistaken, check your settings. I believe they changed the default
to 4.7.
Super high effort.
Oh, okay.
So make sure your effort is the same, and you may want to change back to like 4.6 or 4.5. Wait,
so where do you do that? Effort/effort?
Yeah.
Yeah. And then what do I say? Low, medium, high, max, auto.
Medium is what I've always used.
Medium.
But I noticed today when I opened it that it was auto set to extra high.
Oh, the bastards.
You're right, Cotton Gin. I've heard that the 4.7 people hate it.
So how do you set the model? Is it model? Yes, model.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Opus. Okay, model. What is it supposed to be? It's not auto completing for me.
4.6.
But do you just
probably
point in 4.6? Does it do that? No.
Mm-hmm.
Model like 4.6 not found.
Model. Opus 4.6.
Opus. Is it dash 4.6?
I got no idea.
What? Come on, help me out here.
I don't know.
No, can't find it. Anyway, Dave,
I'm telling you, the local model stuff.
Oh no, that's the future.
Try whenever you get a chance. Try Quinn 3.6, the 35B A3B model.
Well, let me write that down.
It is Quinn
3.6.
Quinn 3.6, the 35B A3B model.
A3B model. Okay.
Use it on open code. Run it locally and run it on open code. It is really, really good.
Awesome.
And it's so fast. I mean, it is giving me output almost before I hit the enter key.
Yeah.
It is lightning fast.
And this concludes another episode of What the Heck Were Dave and Adam Talking About? It's a beautiful thing. Thank you all very much. Boardroom will be back next week. Dave, thank you, brother. Have a great weekend. Take Melissa on a date.
Done.
Or whatever. We'll be right back.
You have been listening to Podcasting 2.0. Visit podcastindex.org for more information.
Go podcasting!
You can spam my lightning node all you want.